Bagnall didn't actually say so, but it looked to him as if the new chief executive was an idiot. Eisner thought Bagnall could have been a little more deferential. When they arrived at the meeting, Bass was surrounded by some of his top advisors, including Checky and Richard Rainwater, a partner of the Basses and their chief financial advisor. After brief introductions, Sid Bass turned to Eisner. "So how do you see the company?" Eisner spoke extemporaneously, using a black marker to write down some of his points. He reiterated his belief in the need for creative leadership and stressed the company's potential to ramp up film and television production, especially TV, where the profits for syndication could be huge. These were businesses he knew well from Paramount, including ways to finance films that shifted most of the financial risk onto outside investors looking for tax deductions. He also stressed the importance of new secondary markets for theatrical films, especially home video and cable television. These markets alone, he argued, should boost the value of the Disney Library of Animated Classics to about $200 million. And, as in the past, he felt that new Disney films would be a fertile source for new theme park attractions. Bass and his advisors left the room for about a half hour. When they returned, they urged Eisner and Wells to raise the admission price to the theme parks, which Bass said was ridiculously low, and do more to develop the vast acreage Disney owned around Disney World. Disney ran only three hotels, one in California and two in Florida, which were nearly always fully occupied. Scores of other hotels had sprung up around Disney World to accommodate the approximately 10 million visitors per year streaming to Orlando. There was no reason Disney shouldn't capitalize on the park's success by developing more hotels on its property. Later, Eisner had dinner at Bass's house, which was filled with modern art. Though Eisner himself knew little about the subject, he knew that Bass was on the board of New York's Museum of Modern Art with Ovitz, and before the trip, Ovitz had spent hours lecturing Eisner on modern art in general, and Bass's taste in particular. Bass was impressed when Eisner recognized and complimented him on a piece of sculpture by Robert Irwin, an obscure California artist that Ovitz had told him Bass collected. Despite Eisner's reservations about Marriott's lack of creativity, a joint hotel deal seemed to make sense and negotiations went ahead. The Basses and Checky strongly encouraged it. Frank Wells met with Judson Green, a young theme park executive in Orlando, took a cocktail napkin and jotted down terms of a deal with Marriott he wanted Green to negotiate. "Don't drop the ball," he said in parting. A few weeks later, Chow showed Eisner and Wells some model rooms he and a group of Imagineers had designed for the Grand Floridian, one of the new hotels to be built by Tishman. The hotel was designed with a frilly, fanciful Victorian theme, far more creative than anything Eisner had seen on his visit to Marriott. It confirmed what Eisner was thinking, which was that hotels could be entertainment as much as lodging, the same kind of themed attractions that the parks themselves offered. So sure was he of the concept that Eisner decided then and there that Disney could create its own real estate development subsidiary, make all the creative decisions, and jettison both the proposed Marriott deal and the Tishman partnership. "We're going to hire the best people in the industry," Eisner insisted in a burst of excitement. "We'll make mistakes along the way, but they'll be our mistakes, and we'll learn from them." Wells readily agreed. In getting the best people, Eisner was determined to fire Bagnall as chief financial officer.